You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is the Locked On Jets podcast for Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com, and our episode today is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit RockAuto.com and tell them Locked On sent you. On today's show, we have our weekly mailbag, thanks to everybody who sent in questions. Our first question comes from Jim. Jim asks, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the team's offensive linemen going forward. Could you give us a one-sentence evaluation on each of them and whether you would keep them or dump them for next year? I'm going to leave out Becton because we all know the answer to that one. So Jim wants to take away the positivity. He's not going to let me mention Mekhi Becton. Okay, so first is George Fant, $9.4 million in 2021, $2 million in dead cap if cut. Fant, keep him unless you can find an upgrade. If you want one sentence, I mean, I'd have to go into more than one sentence. I think Fant is okay. I don't think that he's the type of guy that has to stay. I think in an ideal world, you'd find an upgrade, but it's going to be tough to upgrade everything the Jets need. So I'm sorry, Jim. This is more than one sentence, but I think the Fant situation deserves more than that. Greg Van Roten, $3.6 million in 2021. $250,000 dead money if cut. Keep him. You know, I'm sorry, I can't do it in one sentence, but I think he should stay. If you can find an upgrade as a starter, he's still a good backup, though. Alex Lewis, $7 million in 2021, $1.6 million if cut. Cut him. All right, that's easy. That's one sentence. Connor McGovern, $9.3 million in 2021, $10.7 million. Dead money if cut. You have to keep him. He costs more to cut than it would to stay stay on the team, and you know you need him to start. Maybe you move him to guard if you find a center that you like better, but he's going to be on the team and he's going to be a starter. Chuma Edoga, $1 million in 2021, $400,000 dead money if cut. No reason to cut him. I mean, he's depth. I mean, I don't know if he's great depth, but he's better than a guy you could just sign off the street. Pat Elflein, an unrestricted free agent. You can bring him back if he's cheap because he's a somewhat functional backup. Josh Andrews, unrestricted free agent. Let him go. Not that good. Connor McDermott, $1.2 million in 2021, $275,000 dead money if cut. Get rid of him. Connor McDermott's not any good. And then the last guy Jim lists is Ben Aijalana. Well, if Mike Maccagnan was here, Ben Aijalana could probably get about $5 million guaranteed. So that's the state of the offensive line. I think a lot of work is needed on the offensive line. I think that if you get past Becton, there are not any long-term players there. There are a few guys who may be able to help you in the short term, but beyond that, I think the offensive line needs a lot of work. And no, Jim, they should not bring back Ben Aijalana. The next question comes from Tim. While there has been a lot of speculation concerning Deshaun Watson, there is another quarterback currently playing in Texas who seems to be overlooked. The Cowboys and Dak Prescott are in their annual contractual stare down, and perhaps this is the season Jerry Jones looks to trade him. How do you think he compares to Watson as a quarterback? Would the Jets be interested if the Cowboys shopped him, and would the compensation returning to the Cowboys look similar to that wanted by the Texans? You know, Tim, I think the reason that this gets overlooked is that there is an assumption that Prescott's going to be back in Dallas this year, whether it's over the franchise tag or whether it's not. So I think that's the reason nobody's really talking about it, is even though there's kind of a contract standoff, even if the Cowboys have to use the franchise tag, they'll probably do that. You know, if you look at the situation with Houston, it's still in the Texans' interest to not trade Deshaun Watson. And, you know, it may just be a situation Watson's forcing his way out, whereas with Prescott, you don't get the feeling that he wants to move on from Dallas. So if he doesn't want to move on, then it behooves the Cowboys to work things out. Of course, you know, I think if he's available, you have to inquire about it. Is he is, he, you know, I don't know where I'd rank him, but I definitely put him in the top 10 among quarterbacks in the NFL. So I think if you're the Jets, you'd have to inquire. And a lot of the same concepts I've used describing the Deshaun Watson situation would apply, because he is a legitimate top starter. He will only be 28 years old at the time the season starts. Now, of course, there's always the caveat that his medical situation would have to check out, because he is coming off that serious injury. So you'd have to consider that. So all of this is assuming that the doctors clear him and that he's going to make a full recovery. But I think it's just not that likely that Prescott's moving on, because there's been no indication that he's done with Dallas. I mean, the situation may be frustrating, but yeah, if they put him on the market, I think you'd have to have a lot of interest, because this is a guy who could be an answer at the quarterback position. And it goes back to the pros and cons I've been talking about. You know, what's the best move for the Jets at quarterback? I don't know that there's a best. I just think that there are different choices you could make depending on what your objectives are, depending on how much risk you wanted to take on. I think ultimately, however, the most likely scenario is Prescott being in Dallas for the 2021 season. And, you know, after the 2021 season, who knows? Because that's a point where they are going to have to work out a new contract because of the way the NFL's structure works. It's very, very difficult to franchise a player a third straight year, because there's an enormous raise. That's something that the players' union negotiated into the collective bargaining agreement, that when you franchise a player a third straight year, he gets a 44% raise, which is generally a non-starter at any position, but especially at quarterback, when you think about the salaries that are available to players there. So, you know, in a world where maybe the Jets don't take a quarterback at two this year, maybe they just move forward with the quarterback situation, and they're still looking for their long-term solution a year from now. If Prescott's going to become a free agent, that could be something that is possible. But I think my hunch is that it's probably not going to happen this year. Chain stores have different price tiers for professionals and do-it-yourselfers, but RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, RockAuto.com. This is the Locked On Jets podcast on this Mailbag Wednesday. Our next question comes from Joe. What are your thoughts on the way that the two Super Bowl teams went about building their rosters and their organizations? What are some things the Jets could learn from the two teams to improve? So, Joe, I have not done an in-depth study of either team, but just off the top of my head, I mean, there are a couple things that come to mind. The first thing with Tampa Bay is how we view long-term building in the NFL. I think many teams in the NFL are very short-sighted with the way they build their rosters. They end up making moves that hurt them in the long run to try and gain in the short run. But I think sometimes people misunderstand the time frame that constitutes the long run in the NFL. You know, if you're thinking long term, you're really thinking like 2 to 3 years ahead. It's difficult to plan beyond that in the NFL. And I think, you know, when you're trying to fill major positions, whether it's head coach, whether it's quarterback, you always want the guy who's going to be there for 15 years, and that's great. But ultimately, like in the NFL, the long term is really like 2 to 3 years. So when you go out and get an old quarterback like a Tom Brady, or hire Bruce Arians, who's in his late 60s, you know, maybe there's a little bit of bias against that, because you look at these guys and you say, well, they're not going to be here for 15 years. Well, in the NFL, you can't really count on anybody being with you for 15 years. Really, 3 years is a long time in the NFL. So I think as much as you should avoid short-term thinking in the NFL, thinking long-term is really not that long. You know, 3 years is really the long term in the NFL. So I think that that's a good lesson for Tampa Bay. And that's something, you know, you hear frequently when you talk about major moves the Jets need to make. People don't want certain people because they don't think they'll be here long enough. Well, if you get somebody who's going to be here 3 to 5 years, that's an extremely long time. I mean, 5 years ago, Brandon Marshall and Darrell Revis were on the Jets. So 5 years is forever in the NFL. And that's just something to think about as you fill important positions on your team. As far as Kansas City goes, I mean, one thing that really comes to mind for me is I think maybe this is just because the Jets have had such untalented rosters in recent years, but you talk to some Jets fans and there's almost this perception that you can have too many good players in one role, in one position. You look at the way the Chiefs built their offense, they just keep adding playmakers, and they add playmakers and add playmakers. And, you know, when you talk about what the Jets should do in an offseason, sometimes I'll mention I'd like to see the Jets add 2 to 3 receivers, and people say, well, that's too many. Well, it's not too many. Look at the way Kansas City built their offense. You always need depth in this league. And look at what happened in the Super Bowl when they could not play their starting tackles. Their backups got destroyed. And that cost them, I mean, that may have cost them the game. So I think with Kansas City, if you look at the way they built their offense and you look at what happened to them in the Super Bowl, I never agree with the team building idea that we have too many good players at this position. You could always use more good players. So I guess those would be the two big takeaways I have just with like a quick analysis of the two teams. Our next question, other than family and coaching tree, what evidence is there that Mike LaFleur is any good? What will the Jets offense look like with LaFleur? I mean, there's no proof. There's as much proof as there is for any first-time coordinator. You're not really going on any solid evidence. That's the way. I mean, what evidence is there that Robert Saleh is going to be a good head coach? Whenever you have somebody in the job for the first time, you can never say for sure. You're just making a projection. Now, what do you like about LaFleur is that he comes from the Shanahan coaching tree. And young coaches who come through this system have tended to succeed. They tend to be trained very well when it's time for them to run their own offense. They'll probably run something like you see in San Francisco, where you have an offense that's based around the outside zone. You'll see motions. You'll likely see a lot of the same concepts, passing game, perhaps built off play action, but every offensive coach kind of takes what they've learned and they have their own twist on the system. So you'll probably see some changes. It's difficult to say what they'll be until we actually see Mike LaFleur in action. But ultimately, he's got a great pedigree. He's learned from really good offensive names. And I think he's ready. I think he's earned a chance to be an offensive coordinator. So I was happy with the hire, even though with any first-time coordinator, you can never really guarantee that they're going to be good or be bad. Next question. Over the offseason, I want to learn more about the X's and O's of football, defensive and offensive schemes, understanding play concepts, how to evaluate players, and things like that. Do you have any websites or books that you particularly like that you really learned a lot from? Do you have any insights for people looking to learn more about this sport? So I've never actually read this book myself, but there's one book that I've heard from a lot of people is a great first step in really learning the intricacies of the game, and that's Take Your Eye Off the Ball by Pat Kerwin, who was a former front office guy in the NFL who went into the media. And I've heard that that's really a great starting point if you're looking to learn in depth about what's happening in the league. So that, I guess that would be the first book I would recommend, even though I've never really read it myself. A website that I really love is smartfootball.com by Chris Brown, who also wrote for grantlands.com back when that website existed. He does not write much anymore, but he has a lot of great articles that break down the intricacies of the game, so that's a good guy to follow. I also enjoy Brett Coleman's videos. He's got a YouTube channel. He's actually been a guest on this podcast a few times. I think he does a great job teaching you about the techniques of the sport. If you'd like advice, I mean, the one thing I've always tried to do is focus on one thing at a time and really, really try and learn that. So maybe I'll focus on run blocking schemes And then once I know that, then I'll move on to pass blocking schemes. And once I know that, then I'll move on to coverage. And once I know that, I'll start studying the salary cap. It's kind of like a piece by piece type of deal. If you try and do everything at once, you never really learn anything. So you kind of have to focus on things. And some of the best received articles I've ever written have been on things that I had just learned myself. You know, I may have tried to dive into some advanced concept and I thought it was interesting. So a few days later, I wrote an article because I thought if it's interesting for me, probably will be interesting for other people. So those would be my pieces of advice. You know, I think if you're going to start, the book I've always heard is Take Your Eye Off the Ball by Pat Kerwin. But my biggest piece of advice, if you're looking to really get into the game, is just focus, figure out which would really interest you the most in the league. What advanced concept really interests you the most, and dive in. And don't move on to something else until you feel like you've really mastered that, because otherwise you're just going to be bouncing from place to place and you'll never really master the concepts. Bet online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but NBA, college basketball, and the NFL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. There are real-time updated odds and props on almost everything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using promo code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. This is the Locked On Jets podcast on this Mailbag Wednesday show. How far back would the Jets have to trade to pick up a first this year and a first next year, along with other day two or three picks? This team has a lot of holes to fill, and trading back might be a good option. I don't know that it's going to be that far, because this is a year where there are going to be quarterbacks in play, and teams are always willing to trade a premium for a quarterback. People always like to look at that Jimmy Johnson chart and try and figure out what it would take, but ultimately, this is true in any business. The price of something is how much somebody's willing to pay for it. And when it comes to the quarterback position, we saw this on the other end a few years ago. Teams are willing to pay a lot for the quarterback. And that's right, because the quarterback is the most important player on the team. So I would not be surprised if the Jets could get that from a team that's in the top 10, if that team really liked either Justin Fields or Zach Wilson. So, you know, I don't think this is going to be a case where the Jets would necessarily have to drop down to the 15s or 20s and get some team to pay a high premium. I think the premium could be there just because of who's available. You know, if you go back to 2019, many of us wanted the Jets to trade down from that pick because they needed so much and they had so few draft picks that year. But it was tough because there was no quarterback. And ultimately, they were not. I mean, I'm not sure how motivated they were to move down 2 years ago, but ultimately, they were not able to because there was not a ton of interest. The quarterback makes a big difference, and a lot of people want the Jets to draft a quarterback. I get that, but trading, there's a reason you get a lot for trading down. You know, you may be giving up something, but there's a reason you get a lot in return for that. You have to give up something to get something. So if you want to trade down, you probably would be able to get quite a bit this year. Our next question deals with the salary cap and draft picks. The question is that since there are six teams over the cap projects to be at least $20 million over the cap, and then three more teams that would be $20 million over the cap after they sign their draft picks, the money that's allotted to draft picks, would some of these teams look to trade draft picks so that they did not have to sign those players? So I guess the question is essentially, teams are over the cap, you got to pay money to draft picks, or would you just trade those draft picks rather than draft players and have those players sign contracts that take up cap space? And could the Jets acquire some of these picks? And I don't think so, because draft picks tend to be cheaper than players on the open market. So if you are in a cap crunch, the way you get around that is drafting well, because then you get players who are really cheap. So if you're in a tight cap situation, I think that makes you less likely to trade your picks away. Because yes, even though you have to pay those draft picks, you could get guys who are good who cost much less than guys who are good available in free agency. So I don't think that just because teams are tight up against the salary cap that they're necessarily going to be more likely to trade draft picks. I think they're less likely because they're going to need to figure out ways to get quality production on small salaries, and that's what you do through the draft. And our last question. I have long had a draft philosophy that you should never pick up a quarterback unless you have two picks in that in the first round. If we trade down in the first round and get another second round pick, are there any quarterbacks that still might be there worth taking a shot on? I realize we would have two picks in the first round, but we have so many holes that I think it would be unwise to use one of them on a quarterback and throw them to the Wolves like we did with Sam. Or would it be smarter to build the team this year and use the extra draft capital to go get a quarterback in the first round next year? Well, as always, it depends on the players. You know, if there was a guy who was a franchise quarterback who you had a good feeling would be there in the second, then you could wait. I don't like any of these guys who are projected to go in the second round, though. I'm not a big Mac Jones guy. I'm not a big Kyle Trask guy. And those guys could go in the first round as well. So looking at the quarterbacks who are projected to go in round two, I'm not a big fan of them. I think this is different from when they drafted Sam, though, because when they drafted Sam, they had to trade up. And in trading up, they had to deplete their draft capital going forward. Even if you draft the quarterback this year, normally when you draft a quarterback, that's your only first-round pick. The Jets actually have a chance to add an extra first-rounder this year. And then they have two first-round picks next year. And they have an extra third-round pick this year, and they have a lot of cap space. So there's going to be an opportunity to build a team around a quarterback that the Jets have this year. I think that it is a valid question. Would the Jets be better trading down, perhaps, and putting even more pieces on this roster around whatever quarterback comes in the future? I guess it all depends on your level of tolerance for risk, because ignoring the quarterback this year would be the high-risk move, because you're assuming that you're going to find somebody next year or the year after, and that may not be the case. But it's certainly possible. I mean, there are teams that have done it. There are teams that have waited a year on the quarterbacks and ended up finding the right guy for them, so it's not exactly the... It's not exactly an impossible situation, but there's also the school of thought that if you have the opportunity to take a quarterback now, you don't know what's going to come in the future. So I guess it all depends on your level of risk tolerance. It depends on how much you like these individual quarterbacks this year. Now, if you were higher on like a Kyle Trask or a Mac Jones than I am, then maybe that would be the move you'd want to make. But I don't think I would wait till the second round this year. I would either use the pick at two on a quarterback, or I'd look to trade down and really build this roster up. I think you have to make a decision. You're either drafting a quarterback at two. For me, this year, looking at these prospects, at this point, what I'd say is I'm either drafting a quarterback at two, or I'm not drafting anybody at all. I think this is a case where you either get the elite guy, or you wait a year. That's... I as always, I reserve the right to change my mind as I evaluate these guys further. Anyway, that's all for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, subscribe to it and leave it a good review. Have a great Wednesday, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more Jets.